I'm Richard Freiberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 212 for the Easter long weekend, starting 29 March 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, EOH's Annus Horribilis.
Also this week, you've got to say that carefully, otherwise you're going to end up saying something rude. Also this week, Facebook's travails, Huawei's new phones, and I'm wondering whether market failure in telecoms is nothing but a fallacy.
It's not Friday, but it's the start of a long weekend, and that means it's time to talk tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. So I believe you have been geeking out to rather extraordinary levels in the last few days, building systems and upgrading your internet connection and just generally geeking out.
Yeah, it's been a milestone of geekery for me, definitely, by far. So I've finally started my system build that we've been speaking about for the last few months. Got all the equipment. I've got a variety of things. I'm going to build two machines. These are both test beds. The one is going to be a Ryzen based machine, AMD Ryzen based machine, and the other one is going to be an Intel Core i7 based machine. I've got a very beautiful MSI GTX 1070 Ti graphics card, which what I'm trying to build is not the highest end machine money can buy. I'm trying to build something that is reasonably affordable in a gaming type machine. And that's going to be the angle for the content I create off the base of that as well. You know, just to kind of show that, you know, you don't have to spend 50,000-60,000 rand to get something decent.
Yes.
And kind of trying to see how we can push these machines to, you know, just push them a bit to get better performance. And also, obviously, just playing with components again. I mean, it's been a few years since I've had my hands dirty in a system build. So it's going to be very exciting to get back into that. And obviously, yeah, these machines are going to be absolutely fantastic. So mm-hmm. as a part of that, I also upgraded my fiber connection because I needed to test a new router that I'm playing with, as well as I just wanted to get download a lot of data very quickly while I was doing these system builds. So I thought let me kill two birds with one stone. So I'm sporting now for a very limited time a one gigabit per second fiber connection, and it is every bit as amazing as what that sounds. I must be honest. Yeah, I've been trying to break that completely. I haven't hit 1 gig yet. I've got close to 80 megabits.
Over Ethernet.
Download. Yeah, over Ethernet. But just having, I did a massive game update, Battlefield 1, that was about a 64 gig complete game download over
Steam.
The Origin network.
No, Origin.
Not Steam.
Okay.
Origin, yeah. I didn't time it exactly, but it took me less than an hour because I stepped away from my PC and I thought I was going to wait a while. And when I came back, 64 gigs was downloaded and installed.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you're drawing from a fast system, the benefits are there.
Yes.
But it's just pure indulgence, to be honest with you.
No, a gig. It's something truly beautiful. But you know what I would fire up on that if you haven't already is Google Earth.
Yes, I actually haven't. That's a very good point. I must do that.
Go into a city with a lot of 3D building detail like New York or San Francisco or one of the big American cities.
Yes,
and
yes.
Switch every setting in Google Earth to maximum and just watch that city load on your screen instantly.
Oh, yes. I will be doing that this weekend. That's for sure. No, this is the first weekend I've actually got some time. I mean, this weekend has been planned to be geeking out. So I'm going to be – if anybody's got any other suggestions that we can put this line to through its bases much appreciated. But look, the reality of having a 1 gigabit per second line is that the servers you're pulling from isn't going to deliver speeds of that for the most part. Some local game servers you can get that. Obviously, if you're doing a speed test, you're going to your local nearest node to give you that 1 gig or that 800 meg throughput. But still, it's about the bandwidth. I mean, you can put a lot more people on a gig line doing a lot more simultaneously, and that's where you're going to see the power of this the thick bandwidth.
Have you done any international speed tests on that line?
Yes, I have. It dropped significantly, obviously, because you're going through many other nodes when you do a speed test to an international server. It does drop significantly depending on where you go. I've had it down to 600 megs at one point, but most is 200 megs.
Wow.
Most places are 200-300 meg down.
Yeah, it's because the international bandwidth is more contended than the local bandwidth.
Oh yeah, yeah. Much, very much so. I mean, if you do a speed test, you'll notice that on the speed test screen, you can choose where you want to test the note from. And most of the time, it's very close to you. So the real world speed test versus a speed test are two different things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, from streaming stuff. Another good benchmark actually is to test, Netflix has got a speed test as well.
That's a great app.
It gives you a continual download. It's not just a one. So it's basically like it's streaming something. It's streaming the data to your PC, and it's measuring that to give you the bandwidth, which is probably more accurate because it's going to give you under continual load bandwidth.
Yes.
For 6,000 Rand, though, I'm not sure if it's something I will do on a monthly and on a permanent basis. I mean, it is beyond phenomenal. But fiber is such an incredible technology. At 100 meg, you're still getting such an incredible service. And
yes.
I've got nothing to complain about on my 100 meg, 50 meg, well, 50 meg line, actually.
Yeah.
Except for that, just, you know, those peaks. If you want to get a lot of stuff very quickly,
yeah,
1 gig is definitely the way to go.
And as 4K gaming takes off and becomes more popular, those downloads on Steam are just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, I would imagine in a few years that most of the high-end games will be at least 100 gigabytes big.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And then but then I'm sure, you know, most people will have access to fiber, and even if you don't have a gig, you'll still get it in record time.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
Yes.
I mean, we are coming from a place of ADSL.
Yes.
Which was horrible. Imagine downloading 64 gigs.
Yeah.
Over an ADSL line.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have ended well for anybody.
No, I mean, it's changed so dramatically. I mean, we're talking to each other now. We're live streaming this. The audio, but we're live streaming it on the internet while we're talking to each other and watching each other in HD video.
It's incredible.
It's lovely. It's lovely. And this just stuff you just couldn't do on DSL.
Yeah, and I mean, this is consumer tech that we're using. We didn't even delve deep into the broadcast level stuff. I
mean,
this is just anybody can access this. And you just need a decent internet connection.
Yeah.
No lag. Yeah, there's no lag. There's no delay on the screen, on the feed. It's pretty impressive.
But I like the video, and we're doing some more work around our live streaming stuff. I can't say too much just yet, but we may be able to talk about it a bit more in the next show. But there's some exciting stuff coming down the line.
So
we have chatted a lot about your tech geekery for the weekend ahead. I'll be eating Easter Bunny chockies while you build Ryzen and Intel systems.
Delicious. I'm going to challenge you to a few games, so you better be ready. You need to give me at least 2 hours of your time over this.
Sure. We can play some PUBG.
Yes.
I installed quite a good game the other day that looks great for multiplayer. Star Wars Battlefront.
Oh, Battlefront is also great.
About 2 years old now, I think, but it's a great multiplayer game.
Yeah. Oh, it's based on the Battlefield engine, right? So it's based on the same engine that Battlefield is built with. So I don't know if you've played Battlefield 1 yet, but that is a super beautiful game.
It is.
As a big Battlefield fan, I haven't played Battlefield 1 yet, so the last 2 weeks, my first introduction to the game as a full-time kind of experience.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed by that.
Yeah, I haven't played much of it, I must say. I've been stuck on playing Party Hard. I wish you'd never told me about
Party
that.
Hard.
It is so addictive. I've spent many, 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 many hours of my life now immersed in this thing. I finished the entire game, and now I'm playing all the user-generated content. And I was a bit annoyed to see that Party Hard 2, which was supposed to be out this month, has been delayed to sometime later in the year.
I don't know what it is about that game. I mean, it's so simple, but it's just...
I find it so relaxing. It's relaxing.
Relaxing killing people. Yeah. Okay. Seems a lot.
I don't know what it says about my personality, but yeah. It's the music too. It's just the whole 8-bit theme it's got going, and the old school 80s music. And have you seen the videos on YouTube for Party Hard 2, though, by the way? It looks very good.
No, I haven't. Yeah. I was actually going
to go have a look after the show at the Party Hard 2 clips.
Yeah, it's on my list. It's on my Steam wish list.
Okay, cool. Let's get started with our show. And Rechard, do you want to ask the first question in this week's quiz?
Oh yeah, we almost missed the quiz results, right? The first question in this week's quiz: Huawei launched two new flagship phones this week. What are they?
And then the launch of NASA's planned replacement to the Hubble Space Telescope has been delayed until at least 2020. What is the new telescope called?
I can't wait for that thing to be live.
Yeah, me too.
Incredible. Imagine the kind of stuff you'll be able to. The, the images you'll be able to download from it. Third question, Naspersa sold 2% of its stakes in China's Tencent. How much money did it net through the sale and will accept to the nearest $1 billion?
Yeah, you and I are talking big money when we'll accept to the nearest $1 billion. Which Cape Town startup has been acquired by U.S. tech giant Hewlett-Packard Enterprise?
And the last question, an autonomous vehicle killed a woman in the U.S. last week. Who did the vehicle belong to?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get to the results at the end of the show. Let's get into our news, Rechot. And EOH, I almost didn't go to their results presentation. You know, these JSE-listed companies always have presentations to investment analysts. They tend to be very dry affairs, and you tend to be able to get everything you need out of the statements that get put out on the JSE Sens news service. And I thought, let me go along. You know, the company has had a very tough 2017, and it'd be interesting to hear what the management has to say about the poor financial performance. So I arrived there and sat down to a packed room at the Hyatt, or what used to be called the Hyatt in Rosebank. I forget what they changed the name to. And Asher Bobot, the former CEO, and who's now the chairman, got up and delivered about a 20-minute long, impassioned, quite emotional at times speech about everything that's happened to EOH in the last year. I recorded it on my phone, and I've actually posted it as a podcast, and it's well worth a listen to. It was very interesting to listen to this in light of everything that's happened in the past year, and I'm not going to rehash it all on this podcast. But you know, they made that acquisition of that group that held those various businesses that were, or which one of which was allegedly involved in dodgy police tenders. Mm-hmm. There were other articles written about alleged corruption or corrupt practices involving EOH businesses. And then, of course, last year we saw the share price coming under incredible pressure, not least in December when it fell to multi-year lows after some of the directors were forced into selling their shares they were in leveraged positions and they were forced to sell their shares after it reached certain trigger levels as it was tumbling. And that caused the share price to crash even further. So it was interesting to quite a rambling sort of presentation by Asher Bobot, but you can see he's very invested and not surprised. This is a business he started 19 years ago and built into one of, if not the biggest IT services company in South Africa. But go have a listen to it. It's an interesting – the sound quality isn't the best because I did record it on my cell phone, but it is quite listenable too, and well worth a listen, I think, too. From what I suppose I could describe him as quite an eccentric character. I think this industry has produced quite a few eccentric characters over the years, and Asher Bobot is one of them, I think.
So you need to be an eccentric to really make a big splash in the tech space.
I think you're right. If you look at the leaders of the big tech companies around the world and in the US, they're all a bit eccentric, aren't they? I think eccentricity is a necessary trait to build a successful multi-billion-dollar business. I mean, if you look at Steve Jobs, he was a bit of a crank from Bill Gates. I mean, he was an odd character. Still is an odd character. There've been plenty of books written about some of the funny things he used to do and how he used to rock in his chair endlessly and these are eccentric guys, and I think you need to be a little bit mad to be as successful as some of them are, and we've certainly seen that in the South African context as well. Some of the most successful CEOs have been a. I'm not saying Asher Bobot is mad, but he is.
No, but they all have a twist, I think.
And they do. Yes.
With anything, I think it also helps you stand out a bit. You know, just
it does.
People do remember you, and then you do make a bigger impact.
Yes.
That goes a far way.
Yeah. So go listen to that presentation. It's on the website, and there's no doubt that EOH has made mistakes. I think it's also fair to say that they won't like me saying this, but I think it's also fair to say that there's been quite a degree of arrogance involved in the organization. Certainly, and I think it still came across to some extent in this week's financial results presentation. But it's a good organization, and its share price has come off by something like 70 or 80% in the last year and a bit. And if they can turn it around, it could be a screaming buy at current levels. I'm not buying it. In fact, my experience in the stock market suggests that you should never follow any financial advice that I might give on equities. But at these levels, one does have to wonder if it's one of the best potential share buys on the JSE right now.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you listen to management, they say they've got this thing under control and they're going to be turning it around in the second half. But the proof will be in the pudding, and that pudding will be the full year results, which will be out in about 6 months' time. It was a terrible first half. Headline earnings per share down 23%. This is from a business that was growing its headline earnings per share 20, 30, sometimes even 40% every year for coming on for 20 years. And then suddenly you've got this, so it's almost a steady lineup. And then now suddenly, dunk, down. So it's broken a very long record. It raises other questions as well, like can they continue to buy companies? I mean, they've been a very acquisitive company, and their growth has to a large extent been based on making acquisitions. But those acquisitions have been based on issuing expensive scrip, their shares, and then quickly integrating those companies into the EOH business. But if the share price has come off and it's not showing any signs of recovery, certainly not at the moment, it becomes more difficult to use your share price to buy companies. I see Zunaid Mayet, the CEO, and we did a podcast with him as well this week, saying that they've raised cash through this new BE partner that they've brought on board, and that they should be able to continue making acquisitions, but the mix may change, and they may be issuing less shares and paying more cash to do deals. But it's an interesting company, and it's been through a very tough time in the last 12 months, and I think it would have tested even the world's best manager, and we'll only know how well they've come out of it in 6 months' time. But an interesting company, very, very interesting company. Rechot, I think we must take a quick ad break for our podcast listeners. Live streamers will be back right now.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my cord just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rechot?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So, Facebook.
Facebook.
What are they doing? Have you been following this Cambridge Analytica story and everything that's flowed following that? And has it made you any more likely to want to leave Facebook?
To be honest, no. It didn't make me want to leave Facebook, but it's made me... It's kind of brought to the front this whole thing about privacy and how much we're actually giving over to a company like Facebook.
Mm.
I mean, part of what I do, part of my work is Facebook-related stuff. So for me, you know, I can't really just leave it. You know, I'm vested in it from many angles. You know, I work with a few advertisers that use the platform very successfully, which is kind of why I was surprised when there was such an uproar with how people are able to target other people on Facebook. And I'm sure that the methods that Cambridge Analytica used is a bit more dodgy than the tools that's available to your average consumer or advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
But Facebook, the whole base of Facebook isn't secretive. You know, you get there's data. Everybody's got their data on there, and it allows people like advertisers or people who just want to share their posts or promote their posts for their business or small business to reach very specific audiences. That is their customers. Obviously, this kind of thing can be used for the wrong thing, as we have seen now, or can be used for dubious things, I guess. But it does answer, ask, open a lot of questions. Like, why did a company get such deep-rooted access to so much data? You know. And I mean, it's also not forget that they only really breached. They only used this application that they got to gather the data. They only targeted a few hundred thousand people. From there, from there they were able to connect up to 50 million people just by scrolling everybody that they use this app with. They crawled their profiles, and that got them to the 50 million number that we've been hearing.
Yeah. So. Facebook announcing this week that they're going to change the privacy settings and massively simplify them and make them easier to access and also surface them in the news feed of users. And a lot of it looks very good, but some people have pointed out, and they're quite right, that Facebook was going to have to do this anyway because of GDPR, which is the European Data Protection Regulations. I think it stands for General Data Protection Regulation. Which is quite a strenuous set of regulations dealing with data privacy, and they're coming into effect quite soon. And so in many respects, Facebook probably simply just brought it forward and made it look like they were responding to this issue. But it's good that they are looking at this issue, because clearly our user data has not been looked after as carefully as it should have been. I used to do it a lot in the past, and you know, it's so convenient when you're on the web and you're signing up for a new service and it says log in with Facebook. But when you click on that, you're giving access to certain features on Facebook, or that third party app is going to get access to a bunch of things on Facebook. It does tell you what those things are, but I think a lot of users just go, okay, accept. Next thing you know, the app's got your email address, it's got your phone number, it's got any type of information that you've agreed to share.
Yeah.
And when you sign up for a lot of these things, you don't even realize you're doing it, and then you go into your Facebook privacy settings, and many people don't go into their Facebook privacy settings, and you go and then you see there's 40 third party applications that have access to your data.
Yeah, I actually need to clean that out as well, because I use that feature. It's a great feature to have on the internet. And
there's
so many services now.
Yeah.
You don't want to be signing up for everyone manually. It's just, it is time consuming. Maybe we're a bit lazy, but that's reality.
It is laziness. I mean, I use a password manager now, and when I fill in the details, my email address and password, Dashlane, which is the password manager I use, automatically saves it because there's a plugin in my web browser. So I just literally log in, boom, done, log in, and I don't know what the password is. I never will. And next time I go back there, Dashlane logs me in automatically. So it's taken away that difficulty process to a large extent. So I've stopped allowing anyone access to my Facebook profile, and I've deleted every third party app I had signed through there, because in light of what's happened here, I don't trust them.
I was just going to ask so what is your opinion on what's happened? I mean, you obviously still have a Facebook profile.
Yeah.
Do you feel the need to delete it completely?
No, I don't. I can't. Facebook is universal. It's ubiquitous. Everyone's on there. So deleting it is not really an option. So I keep up with family and friends on Facebook mainly. I don't really use it for business too much.
But it's great for that. It's fantastic for connecting with people.
It is. But I think as a consumer, you just need to be aware of the fact that you are the product, and that Facebook is mining your data to sell you advertising. And I think if you're mindful of that and you regularly check on your privacy settings in the settings menu and make sure nothing's changed, I wouldn't go as far as saying read the terms and conditions, because, I mean, no one actually does that. And they have 50 pages of legalese. And I think it's ridiculous to expect anyone to actually read through those terms and conditions. Certainly I think people should be conscious of the fact that they're the product when they're on there, and they should also make sure that they're not sharing information that they don't want to. So typically you should not be sharing your Facebook news feed with anyone other than your friends, which I think is the default setting, right? But go in there and make sure you aren't actually sharing everything with the planet. Tighten it up.
Yeah, there's two major parts to privacy on Facebook. It's basically who you let, who you allow to see your content, and basically public.
Mm.
If you put it on public, obviously, then even search crawlers can find the information that is on your site. So what I've done many years ago is I actually closed down everything. So if you search for my profile, you won't see anything. You might see my profile picture, but you won't see a friends list. You won't see a timeline. You won't see a photograph that I posted. It's just completely blocked down.
Yeah.
Same with when anybody's tagging me on Facebook. So all of those things are also completely shut down from my side. So people can tag me, but I get a notification, and I can either allow or, you know, delete that post on my side. So it'll still pop up on their side, obviously, but I can still control from my side who I want to see that and who I want that to see that popping up on my side.
Yeah. But I think the most important thing to do, perhaps even more important than just going through the privacy checkup, is just to check what third-party apps have access to your data. And I think that if you haven't done it before, you might be quite shocked.
Yeah, I'm going to be shocked. I haven't done that since I started using it, and I've used it a lot. So
yeah,
I'm going to be in for a shock.
So there are a lot of services that you sign up for, and you actually forget about, you stop using over the years, and they sit there, and they can see your data. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, Rehat.
No, I don't think you are. I think we need to be cautious with these things, because like we've seen with this Facebook debacle that's come to the fore now, is that, you know, there's always going to be people out for your data. There's always going to be people who want to use something for their own gain. You know? And if the platforms are there, it's going to be a target.
Yes.
I'm not saying leave Facebook. I'm just saying be cautious, be vigilant.
Yes.
And you know, be a wise digital citizen. Don't be silly.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I want to talk about Huawei. Can you reckon? I'm showing Rehat a video. A phone on my on the screen. Video conference call we're on here. Can you recognize what this is?
Apart from the logo at the bottom, it looks very generic, but it looks like a very nice screen there.
It's beautiful. It's got a huge screen. I think it's 6.2 or 6.5 inches. It's the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, and I'm very, very, very impressed with this phone. It is unbelievably fast. It's got a beautiful screen, as all my messages come through, because it's on silent, of course. Let me just mute that so it doesn't disturb us. It's got a stunning display, almost edge-to-edge. It's unbelievably quick. They've made incredible advances with their skin that sits on top of Android. It's a really, really beautiful device. It's one of the best phones I've seen. And yet they don't want to sell them in the United States.
Yeah, the US has got a thing against China, eh?
Yeah, and it's getting uglier by the minute. And of course, Huawei this week announced the P20 and P20 Pro. I haven't played with one yet, but they are stunning looking phones as well, particularly that Pro model. I look forward to getting one in hand. But you know, I've always thought of Huawei as a little bit of a laggard. I know they've been catching up very rapidly, but a bit of a laggard to Apple and Samsung. But this Mate 10 Pro shows me they have caught up in a big way.
They're a very aggressive company. If you look at what they've been doing and how they've been just trying to get their name out there, they are out for world domination without a doubt, and they want to do it with really good products.
Yeah.
If you look at the manufacturing built over the last few years of the Huawei products, I mean, even their routers and any of their products that they produce, their new stuff, it's superb quality. It is they've stepped up the game, and they're trying to take out the big boys who's already got that kind of stuff down. They're obviously just trying to offer the same type of product, same quality product, but at a cheaper price.
Cheaper price, yeah. Although their prices have been creeping up as well. I think they want to compete in that high-end, high-value, high-margin smartphone space at the top.
Sure, the high-end devices would be on.
But
they've got some really good cheap.
Yeah, for sure. This Mate 10 Pro is a 15,000 rand phone, so it's in the Samsung Galaxy S8. And S9 sort of price category.
Price range.
But it really is very good. I've been playing with it for about a week now, and I'm suitably impressed. And the early reviews I've seen of the P20 and P20 Pro also suggest it's a great smartphone. But yeah, the Americans, it seems to me, and I think I used this word in the last show, but it strikes me as a bit of jingoism. There's this almost righteous nationalism that we're seeing coming out of America, that these phones are going to spy on people. But you know, the iPhone is made in China.
Made.
Everything's made in China.
Exactly. If that's a basis for your argument, you're going to lose, because you know it's all of the tech that we have is coming from that source that they hate so much. You know, so you're not going to get away with it.
Yeah.
And get away from it.
But the big mobile operators there have said that they're not going to sell Huawei phones, and I think Best Buy has just announced that they're also not going to sell them. It's crazy. I mean, on what basis? I think America is very concerned about the rising power of China as a technology giant. And you know, the Trump administration
already are, right? I mean,
they are, and the Trump administration, I think, is very nationalistic and putting up trade barriers. We're seeing that now. You know, they blocked the acquisition of Qualcomm, for example. It's this very sort of nationalistic, protectionist approach, almost anti-globalization, which I would never have really expected from the U.S. Republican Party. I don't know what to make of it. But these are great phones,
and
I'm glad we can buy more Huawei phones here in South Africa, and the company's doing a good job, and it's bringing the competition to Samsung and Apple, especially at that high
more
end.
Choice for the consumer.
Exactly. And who cares if your emails are being read by the Chinese government anyway? Yeah.
Somebody's reading your mails regardless, whether it's Gmail, Apple, Microsoft.
Yes.
Somebody's reading it.
I don't use WeChat, by the way, because I am a bit concerned about that. So maybe I am being a bit paranoid myself. But
who still uses WeChat? Is that still a thing?
About a billion Chinese use it. I don't think it's gained much traction here in South Africa.
Yeah.
We seem to be losing a bit of connectivity here. I might have to redial you, Rechat, if it stays bad.
It goes soft.
But it seems to be back, so let's carry on. I wanted to talk about something I was thinking about and I tweeted about last night. Whenever I go, especially in the telecom space, you go and you listen to presentations on regulation and policy, and there's this chestnut, if I can call it that the politicians love to trot out, and it's the phrase market failure. They say there has been market failure, so we have to intervene in this or that way. And they say, you know, MTN and Vodacom are too dominant, there's been market failure. Or fixed line broadband is too expensive, there's been market failure. And I've thought about this and thought about it, and my conclusion, and I don't know if you have a view on this, Rechat, I could just ramble on about it, but my view is the market can't actually fail, that it has to be by necessity always policy or regulatory failure. Sure, individual companies can fail, and they can fail spectacularly. We've seen that with Steinhoff, for example, here in South Africa. But I think companies or the market behaves logically in the policy and regulatory environment in which it operates. I've been debating this on Twitter, as much as you can have a debate about regulatory and policy issues on Twitter, with Alison Gilwald from Research ICT Africa, someone who I respect a great deal and who knows a heck of a lot about telecoms regulatory issues. And, I just the more I think about it, the more I believe that the market is never the problem. The market always corrects itself. If there's a problem in the market, like we saw, for example, in fixed line broadband in South Africa, where there was a dominant operator, the problem there was the government was protecting the government of the telecom fixed line monopoly, and so it was a policy failure. The market then opened up, actually not through any effort of the government. It opened up because of Eltec won a court case and the telecommunications market became deregulated and people decided they were going to challenge the situation. But we then saw the emergence of Vumatel and a whole host of other fiber providers, and they were filling a gap that Telkom hadn't filled, either because Telkom's prices were too high or they hadn't rolled out the infrastructure. And they hadn't. They hadn't rolled out fiber, and there was a demand for fiber. There was demand for cheaper broadband. And so they filled the gap. So that was the market behaving logically and efficiently.
So that's how a market should behave. When there's a gap, a new competitor comes in. If there's a need, somebody will build it.
But by the same token, if you introduce regulation and you try, regulation very often is introduced well, you know, with the right meaning, people wanting the right outcome, but it often has the unintended consequences. And I'm thinking, ICASA, we all used to clamor, most of us anyway, used to clamor for local loop unbundling. You know, telecom prices are so high, you've got to unbundle the local loop and provide access into that last mile. ISPs need to be able to service customers directly. We must open up the last mile and local loop unbundling must happen. Local loop unbundling never happened. I don't know why. It could have been that ICASA just didn't have the resources to do it. It could have been any number of reasons, but it didn't happen. If local loop unbundling regulations had been introduced, would we ever have had Vumatel?
That's a very good question.
Could the regulation unintentionally result in everyone focusing on telecoms infrastructure, because now it's open, we can use it, we can provide access into homes, and therefore companies then deciding, well, maybe there isn't a market for an alternative last mile fixed provider, and maybe we wouldn't have had the fiber to the home race that we've seen over the last 3 years, 4 years. So that's another side of the thing, and I'd love to argue this out with an economist. Maybe get a libertarian economist on one side, and maybe a more left leaning economist on the other side, and maybe I should do a podcast on this because I think it's a fascinating discussion, and just argue it out. Should we just let the market, a laissez-faire market, operate and just see what the outcome is, or is there a need for some targeted regulation and policy intervention in the industry? The more I look at it, the more it would appear to me that the laissez-faire approach makes more sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm not an expert on regulation. I'm not a telecoms regulatory lawyer, and I'd love to get some views on this. So maybe I'll get a little panel together and we can record a podcast and talk through the issues.
Exactly. Throw it open to the audience and let's see what we can get.
Yeah, for sure. And that's our news plus a bit more this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week, now let's start with our loser because we've already discussed him. It's Mark Zuckerberg. I think in part because of the way he's handled this whole thing. Very, very slow response from Facebook. And I think he's starting to make the right moves now, but he's still going to face a lot of pressure from US and UK lawmakers over the Cambridge Analytica situation. And he's going to face a lot more scrutiny in future. Over the company's business practices. So he's our obvious loser of the week. And our winner this week is a Cape Town-based startup called Cape Networks. They used to be called Asymmetric. Real bunch of propeller heads to develop some very clever technology that allows you to monitor your infrastructure and have it alert you before problems occur. Artificial intelligence, I think, based solution. And they've been bought by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, which is, you know, Hewlett-Packard a year or two back split into two businesses. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise obviously focusing on the more business market. They've been bought up by HPE, and they've got offices in Silicon Valley. And another local Cape Town, they always come out of Cape Town, don't they? Another Cape Town-based startup sold out to an international company. Yeah, we don't know what the value of the deal is. They're not disclosing that. I'd love to know. Every year, round about once a year or so, we hear of another Cape Town startup getting bought out by a big international tech company. I think it's fantastic.
Living the dream. Those guys are living the dream.
Oh, yeah. Garmin bought out a local Cape Town company.
Yeah, Ikubu, the Stellenbosch-based developer. They did the radar, sonar and radar, specifically for bikes. And it's a fantastic product. And Garmin has really did a good job with it,
Yeah. But there's so many little startups coming out of Cape Town and just finding niches and then getting the attention of Silicon Valley. Well done, guys. You are our winners this week. And what's your pick this week, Rehat? You got two, right?
Yeah, I got two. We kind of already spoke about the Cell C 1 gigabit per second fiber, which is absolutely phenomenal. It is, I think, every geek's dream to have that much data coming into the house on tap. So I won't speak more about it. It is a great service, but at $6,000 a month, unless you're a business or you're a serious techie, you'd probably be better suited with 100, 200 meg line, which is still beyond.
If you've got a small business with 10 people sitting in an office, a 1 gig line like that, the price might make sense.
Might make sense, but even for 10 people, you can probably get away with 100, unless you are 10 people doing high-end
10 of us.
Bandwidth. Yeah, 10 gigs. Then a 1 gig would be perfect.
Yeah.
But my actual pick, and the reason why I got the 1 gigabit per second, or I did the upgrade for a very short period, was to test a new gaming router from Netgear. It is called the XR500, and I'm not going to joke with you. This thing is as big as my MacBook Pro. I mean, it's a beast of a machine. It looks like a Bugatti Veyron from the front. I mean, it's as geeky as you can get. For about $5,000, this router isn't just your average fiber router or your average network router. It really is designed around gaming and gamers. So one of the most interesting features about this, it's running on Duo OS. Now, that's the operating system designed for routers that allow you to do a variety of things, from quality control of the network that you're running. You've got a very specific gaming dashboard that allows you to set up profiles for various games. And then what the router can do is to optimize your latency and where you are on Earth using either VPN or just keeping you local to kind of give you the best gaming service or the lowest latency, access to the lowest latency servers. One of my favorite features, though, and something that I don't know why so many router manufacturers don't get it right, but it is really solid network monitoring tools. Having a dashboard where you can see what's currently happening in your network, where the bandwidth is going, what's using, the type of bandwidth. I mean, as a geek, you could appreciate this, always being in control of the tech that is coming in and out of your system or out of your network. So, that is the Nighthawk Pro Gaming Router. It is high-end. It's designed for, you'll really benefit from getting this router if you have a lot of people on Wi-Fi wanting a lot of throughput. It's really strong on that. Obviously, it's got a gigabit network router built in as well. So if you want to set up a LAN or in an office environment, again, you've got some guys who like to play afternoon games, you want the best performance from your router, I would highly recommend checking out the XR500.
What's the fastest speed you got on that thing?
So I haven't tweaked the router much. I only got it last week. I did some bandwidth test at the beginning of the week. I managed to push it up to about 870. I think it was 878 was the fastest I've managed to go.
Over Wi-Fi, which was the fastest.
Wi-Fi. I think, what was that one screenshot I posted? I think I got 300 or 400 megs. I mean, it was...
That's incredible.
It was pushing the limit of Wi-Fi could do at the time, or what I thought the Wi-Fi could possibly do.
Yeah, I think Wi-Fi is well into the gigs now, but if you get the proper high-end router, which I suspect that one is, it's really up to the device that you're connecting to. If you were getting 400 megs, what were you using, your MacBook?
No, I was actually using my MacBook was one, but I also use my cell phone.
Which is an iPhone.
Which is an iPhone, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't tested an Android one yet. That was just like I said, this weekend is the week where I'm going to be truly putting this thing through its paces because I need to spend some time tweaking the network a bit. Mm-hmm. I upgraded all my cables to Cat 6 as well because that was one of the initial kind of, it limited me by, it dropped by about 100 megs a second from 5E, just in real world performance. So as soon as I upgraded to the Cat 6, it definitely performed a little bit better. As far as routers go, you'd think these things are very boring, but this is the first time in a long time that I've seen a router that's pretty exciting. It's the kind of thing that you can tinker with and tweak. And the Duo OS is really fantastic. If you haven't seen it or played with it yet, it's well worth checking out. I think you can even install it on certain other routers. It was a third-party application that you could run on routers. Nighthawk programming, definitely worth checking out. I think you'd like it, don't you?
I think I would. I've seen photos of it. It looks like it looks really mean, actually.
Yeah, it does.
Cool.
And just one last thing. It's got dual core 1.7 gigahertz processors. How cool is that?
Good grief.
Not a toy. You probably mine for Bitcoin using it.
Well, how much did you say the price was?
It was just over $5,000.
Okay, that's quite pricey.
I'll hook it up for you so you can play with it for a bit.
Okay.
I'll come up at your house.
We'll do some gaming over it this weekend as well.
Oh yes.
We'll test those latencies while I blow your head off.
No, bring it on.
No, I'll be getting my head blown off. I can assure you I'm useless at those 3D online games. I've also got two picks this week, bonus picks, because we didn't do a show last week. I was dealing with flooding at my house, the Joburg downpours.
Oh, yes.
I've got two picks. The first one is that Telkom has launched an online store where they're selling a wide range of online gadgetry and unlocked phones. And anyone who remembers the Orange Store back in the day, it closed down about a year, probably 2 years ago now. The Orange Store was a great place to buy discounted phones in particular, but also other electronics.
Yeah.
And I used to use the Orange Store quite a lot, sometimes just to compare pricing. How much does the operator want to charge for this phone? Oh, let's see how much it is on Orange. Okay, they're ripping me off.
Yeah, exactly. It was such a nice platform. It's so sad that they've gone away.
So now we've got store.telkom.co.za, which has been launched in partnership with a local hardware local distributor. I can't say who they are, unfortunately, but it's been soft launched. They're not yet shouting about it from the rooftops, but it's there, and their prices are pretty keen. I've compared a number of smartphones that are available on the Telkom store with Takealot and other online stores, and they are cheaper on every count, usually by about 10% or 15%, which can be meaningful when you're buying a high-end phone.
Yeah, definitely.
So check it out, store.telkom.co.za. And the phones are completely unlocked. You're not going to get any Telkom crapware on the phone. It's just a pure unlocked smartphone from vendors like Apple and Huawei and all the usual suspects.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. Just as a quick spot price check, they've got the iPhone X on the 256 one for 21,315, which I think is a few hundred grand cheaper than the retail prices I've seen listed elsewhere.
Okay, just a couple of hundred.
It could be wrong, but it seems better.
But it's worth checking out, and it's nice to have more electronic stores available in South Africa anyway. Especially selling some unlocked devices with no operator crapware on them.
Yes, please. Thank you.
And my second pick this week is Telegeography's submarine cable map. I often refer to this, and they've updated it for 2018, and they've really made it look beautiful. If you go to submarine-cable-map-2018.telegeography.com, and we will include a link in the show notes, it shows you all the active and upcoming global submarine telecommunications cables. And I love geeking out over this sort of stuff. They sell the map as well. They'll ship it to you.
That is cool. Yeah. That is cool.
It's not cheap, but I'd love to get one for the office. You just laminate it and have it framed and put on the wall in the office, and you can quickly have a look at the world's internet. Because really, submarine cables is the internet in the world.
Yeah, it is. Sure, it's what connects us. Yeah.
Satellite provides some connectivity, but the bulk of the world's internet is running under the oceans. The map there is just so well done. It's so beautifully done. And you can see all the cables. I'm amazed to have a look at how connected the Caribbean is, for example. I wouldn't have expected that.
I think it's probably because it's a thoroughfare for all the cables. Probably stops there. It's probably a landing space to go on.
Yeah, there are a lot of islands there as well, so it looks like a bit of spaghetti because lots of cables going between all these little islands. And I suppose it's also a route to South America, between South America and North America. But it's incredible to see some of the where some of the real infrastructure is built. If you look across the North Atlantic, if you look in Southeast Asia, around China up to Japan, South Africa, while we have celebrated all the cables that have landed here and are still coming in recent years, it still looks nothing like what you see between Western Europe and North America and in the Southeastern Asian region and even in South America. To think 5-6 years ago, it was just one little line coming down to South Africa.
Exactly.
Now we've at least got more than three or four of them and more to come. But it's a fascinating website. I'll put a link in the show notes. But submarine-cable-map-2018.telegeography.com is the URL for that. Best viewed on a desktop computer.
And I see for $250 you can get that map printed for you.
That's right. Yeah, $250. Yeah, so it works out to about $3,000.
Which is actually not bad for a big print.
No,
this will be a big print. Right?
Yes. I hope they don't fold it. If they can ship it in one of those what do you call them, those cardboard cylinder things, then it would be great, because then you can mount it without any folds. But
you can do it flat. You can chip it flat or rolled up.
Oh, you can. Okay. Yeah. I must look into that. I think I must get one ordered and put up on the office wall.
Yeah, it's a business expense. You can do it.
Yeah, for sure.
You need to have the information at your fingertips.
We'll see what my accountant says when he's auditing my numbers at the end of the year. But I'm sure I can get away with that one.
He's going to ask you, what do you mean $250 for a poster? What is this?
Very important poster. And I think, Rechard, that's our show this week. Apart from our quiz results, let me do the first question. Huawei launched two new flagship phones this week. What are they? And that is the P20 and the P20 Pro, and I can't wait to get my hands on them.
Oh, yes. The second question, launch of NASA's planned replacement to the Hubble Space Telescope has been delayed until at least 2020. What is the new telescope called? And the answer, of course, the James Webb Space Telescope.
And Nusperis has sold 2% of its stake in China's Tencent. How much money did it net through the sale? And we said we'd accept to the nearest billion US dollars. And the answer there is $9.8 billion. So about 100, and I'm just running this off the top of my head, about 120 billion rand or so.
Nice.
Nice pocket change, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. Fourth question. Which Cape Town startup has been acquired by US tech giant Hewlett Packard Enterprise? The answer, of course, Cape Networks, formerly known as Asymmetric.
And the last question in this Easter long weekend quiz. An autonomous vehicle killed a woman in the US last week. Who did the vehicle belong to? And that was Uber. And that's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, info@techcentral.co.za is our email address. We'd love to join live in our show. We're going to try and record every Friday at 2 p.m. We might not always get it quite right, but 2 p.m. is the time we're going to target for. So if you want to jump onto Spreaker at that time and join us, that'd be great. In the chat room, I know it's not the best time trying to get people to live stream just before a long weekend. I think a lot of people are in the pub while Rechard and I are talking right now. And in fact, we should probably be going there ourselves.
Maybe we should be recording from the pub. Have the audience right there.
Good planning. We'll do that next
time. Get some beer sponsored. It'll be fine.
We'll do that next time. So until next week, have a great long Easter weekend, everyone. And from Rechard and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.